Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT for April 12th, 2022. I am Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I will usually write the NXT hits and misses and get them up on pwtorch.com for you guys to read before the show goes live. But I actually didn't write them tonight. I've had such a crazy day today. I just said, you know what? I'm going to sit down and enjoy the show. So that's what I did. I sat down and enjoyed the show. And here to talk about the show that we enjoyed tonight with me is Bruce Hazelwood.
Thanks, Nate. And yeah, after last week's just atrocious show, this was a nice bounce back for NXT.
Yes. Yes, it was. It was certainly a nice little recovery after last week's episode. Last week's episode, if you guys don't recall, well, hey, I don't blame you because it was bad. it was bad. So Kelly was going to be here tonight with us. He's actually even, I think, still on this call technically, but he's probably not going to talk. He's feeling a little bit under the weather. He didn't sound all that great. So, you know, Bruce and I were just like, hey, Kelly, you know, take the night up. Well, mostly Bruce said it. I didn't. I just kind of sat by here, and I was going to let Kelly suffer, but you know. It's that back and forth.
For all those times that he got at you for all the mute buttons and for calling you an idiot and everything, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that being said, I was not prepared to host the show tonight. Literally, the decision was made about 30 seconds before we went live. So I don't necessarily have my notes and everything like that, like I normally will, but we'll manage. So let's start talking about the main event tonight. Main event was the gauntlet match for the tag team titles, which saw Pretty Deadly go over after the Creed Brothers had a very strong showing, taking out all the rest of the other teams in the tournament. Pretty Deadly did go over. It was pretty unsurprising. I think the story throughout the entire show was kind of telling that Pretty Deadly was going to go over. They even alluded to the fact earlier in the night that nobody has won the NXT tag titles on their first night on NXT TV. And as soon as they said that, I was like, well, somebody's going to tonight. So I wasn't necessarily too surprised at seeing Pretty Deadly win here tonight. But overall, I enjoyed the gauntlet. Sometimes gauntlet matches, sometimes the gauntlet matches, I'll get a little bit, I don't want to say bored, but like right in the middle, you know, like, yeah, well, there's more people coming out. Like, you know, you don't mind maybe going to the bathroom or you're grabbing a snack or something like that. This actually kept me pretty engaged all the way through. Mostly just because I wanted to see, you know, if the Creeds were going to wind up overcoming, you know, everybody basically having a clean sweep and winning the titles, even though I was pretty much decided on Pretty Deadly taking the belts here tonight, even before it happened. Bruce, what did you think of the gauntlet match tonight?
You know, it wasn't so what are your points? It wasn't just that they kind of hinted heavily that Pretty Deadly might win because the whole they haven't won on their first night kind of thing. But if you just look at the history of gauntlet matches in WWE, particularly since the whole Kofi Mania run, there's a playbook. You know, Tom Collins, who talked about the Steve Austin playbook in his matches, there's a gauntlet playbook, and it's the New Day playbook, where they come out, the face team comes out first, the face team in a gritty performance runs through the first two, three teams, and then the fifth team that comes out is always going to be a cocky heel team that will take the victory away from the face team in a way that gets the crowd really behind the face team because of how much they put into it, the heart they showed, but then makes them really go against the heel team even more because of how, not necessarily underhanded because it's how the match is laid out, but just how maybe undeserving they might feel the heel team is for winning. Now, I will say tonight's match, they gave the Creeds a lot more resiliency once Pretty Deadly came out. I thought Pretty Deadly was going to have a rather quick victory after making their entrance because of just, I mean, I don't know if the Creed Brothers really were that fatigued or they were just selling it like that, but they were just plodding around the ring at a certain point and barely able to move. So I will say, while we especially me, while I quibbled with the Creed never getting their one-on-one title shot, not going over at Stand and Deliver, what they've done here with Pretty Deadly, which I know it was a shift, it was an audible because of what happened with MSK, so it's not even what they were going for, but because of what's happening now, I think the added layers here with Pretty Deadly, one, you know, being the ones to attack the Creed brothers, which prevented them from having their title match after winning the Tag Team Classic, then destroying the locker room, and then attacking them with the steel chairs on their debut, and now here taking away their hard-earned victory for the Tag Team Championship. That's four different things now that the Creed brothers have to go after them, plus the fifth would be the Tag Team Championship. So they have all these reasons now to pursue Pretty Deadly, and I'm just interested now to see how this story plays out, because I don't think that Pretty Deadly, actually, when I think about it, they probably could be okay with losing the titles rather quickly because of their characters and their presentation. And it'll probably be a bigger crowning moment for the Creed brothers that once they overcome Pretty Deadly after all this, and if they would have won at Stand and Deliver, or if they would have received their one-on-one match after winning the Tag Team Classic.
That's kind of like what I was kind of thinking before you, like, as you were talking and kind of before you kind of came back to the to that as your outcome here, because yes, they had to call an audible. MSK could no longer be the tag team champions because, well, hey, one of them is no longer part of the company, so they had to obviously call an audible, go a different direction. And I think this was an interesting, this was a good direction to go. Pretty Deadly, like you said, they were the team that attacked the Creeds. They had a little bit of heat from that. Now they've basically dethroned the Creed. Well, I wouldn't say dethroned because it's not like the Creeds had the titles, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They beat them tonight, and won the tag team titles. Yeah, sure. They could certainly tell that story and have the Creeds beat them. And I think it would be a bit more of a defining moment. It might actually be like one of the biggest moments for Diamond Mine as a whole. So I like that. I think it's good. And Pretty Deadly, they could go on, like you said, they could easily have just a small, like run right now, and easily recover from that. They're super cocky. You know, all they have to do is just kind of like chalk up the loss to, like, I don't know, bad lighting or something. The lights got in their eyes. I don't know, but like they'd be okay. And I think they'd be able to kind of roll with that and probably return to the tag team title scene at some point, in the near future. So overall, I mean, I'm pretty okay with all of this. It was interesting to actually see Sangha in the ring tonight. We haven't seen we've seen him in the ring a little bit here. I don't necessarily know how I feel about this guy, but he was probably the low point of the match for me. Other than that, I got to give some props to Briggs and Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen.
You got it right this time.
Someday, yeah, I was going to say, one of these days I'll get it right without stumbling over the words, because, man. But Josh Briggs, Brooks Jensen, I got to give them some credit tonight, because, like I said, they're not a team that's really wowed me so far. They've been okay in the ring. Their characters have been meh. But maybe over the last, like, 4 or 5 weeks, I kind of like the character work, especially the addition of Fallon Henley. or Henley Fallon. Dante Chen. Thank you. That's nobody will know what we're talking about Dante Chen except for us. So don't worry about that. But they kind of really sold me tonight. They were just like two like fighters in getting in there with these, you know, badass NCAA wrestlers. I think they held their own pretty well. I really like them. So I kind of just wanted to give them a bit of a shout out because they're starting to impress me.
This is one of those matches where every team hit their assignment and no one tried to do more than their assignment or less than their assignment. And the thing with, so there's one part in the match with Briggs and Jensen where I just kind of laughed, and I'm not sure if it was actually part of the story or if they really got confused. And that's when Jensen tried to make the cover when he was the illegal man, and Briggs had to tell him, "Oh, get out. You're not legal." And so I'm not sure if that was supposed to be part of the match or if it was really Jensen forgetting that he was the person that was not the legal man. So that was interesting to me. during the match. Sanga looked to me, in his gear especially, like Braun Strowman did in WWE. The black top with the pants that had like the little camo-looking stripes across it. It looked just like Braun Strowman, only as an Indian guy. So maybe that's what the mold they're going to try to have for him. What upset me about Sanga the most is when he came in and landed his huge move right away, he yelled to the crowd, namaste, and posed, and then went for the cover. Like, dog, he should have gone for the cover first. You know, this has got to maintain kayfabe somewhat. You know what I'm saying? And he didn't do that there. But overall, you know, Waller did really, really well in a little bit that he was there, basically just still feigning the injury and then taking out his arm out of the sling to hit the Creed brothers and go from there. But every team hit their mark. And, you know, the only reason why the predictable outcome here might not be so good is that this is how every single gauntlet match has gone in WWE the last several years, aside from the time when the Usos forfeited against the New Day. That was the only time that was kind of different.
God, that was such a good moment when the Usos forfeited against the New Day. That was fantastic. So like I said, Kelly's technically here. He's listening. He's just muted. So he just chimed in. He says he's going to pile on to Bruce's assignment thing. In the best Royal Rumble, every team has a purpose and meaning. No spot is just there to be there. Even though this match was shamelessly telegraphed, it was laid out impeccably, so it somewhat saved it. And I agree. I think he said it pretty well. Kind of go from there. All right, so let us go to the phone lines and let you guys lead the conversation because, hey, I really don't know which direction the conversation is going to go in tonight. It's not like I'm prepared. So let's go to the phone lines and let's talk to an old friend of ours, Darrell. Darrell, how we doing, man? Darrell, can you hear us?
How y'all doing today?
Hey, there we go. Hey, not too bad. How you doing, my friend? Good, long time no talk.
I was just about to say the same thing. Long time no hear.
Yeah, definitely good to hear from you. So, what brings you to the show tonight?
Okay, probably the Gauntlet match, probably the best match I've seen out of NXT in the past. For a while, even count stand and deliver, when it just, even though it was predictable to a point, but just the structure and everything, and you probably made the Creed brothers a more interesting babyface with challenges and stuff put in their way by doing what you did with that whole thing and letting them go out there and show and prove themselves. Probably the best babyface build they've made in a long, long time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with that one.
Yes, yep. So my question would be, after seeing this Gauntlet match and everything that went on, do you allow, I know you were saying maybe they could lose quickly, but do you allow them to build themselves up pretty deadly there is, and let fans get adjusted and familiar with them before you allow the Creed brothers to come and take them on and you wait for some type of big show?
Yeah, like I don't necessarily want to see it happen next week or even, you know, even a month from now. I think whatever the next premium live event is for these guys, I don't know what the heck what's on the calendar right now, but whatever the next big show for NXT is, I think that's probably a good place to do it. I mean, technically they could pull the trigger, I think, and you know, even do it like next week or something like that. But I think with Pretty Deadly being a pretty new new act to NXT, at least NXT US, you know, a lot of people aren't necessarily familiar with them. You know, we've all talked about in the past. You know, there is some crossover between NXT UK and NXT fans, but not everybody that's watching NXT is watching NXT UK. So I think it probably would be a good idea to build these guys up a little bit, tell their story, especially with the name change too. It might be confusing for some NXT UK fans. Just kind of get used to these guys on NXT TV. And then, yeah, sure, go ahead. The more that you build like a heel for a babyface to overcome, the bigger the moment's actually going to be once they finally overcome it. So I think building them up is probably, you know, probably a good idea, but I wouldn't spend too long on it. I think it's the Creed's time. It's the Creed's time. Bruce, what do you think?
Well, not much to add to that part of the equation. I just wanted to cut back to the little video promo they had earlier the night before the match. excuse me, when Malcolm Bivens kind of talked about Pretty Deadly being pretty dumb, I think, or pretty stupid, one of the two. In the past, I've noted that Brutus is a little too intense and kind of always out of 10 on his promos, kind of like Braun Breaker. But tonight, he was reserved, yet still focused on what they needed to do and their goal and their mission, and he wasn't just over the top. And I thought that was nice to see. That shows that he is, what's the word, trying to add nuance to his characters. And Julius, even though his delivery is a little stiff, he's getting better. And I like the confidence they have to straight face just say that we're not just the best tag team right now. We're the best tag team ever. And not do it in an over-the-top way like the Ascension used to do it, but just do it in a way that matches their character. And when they go – so I like when they show these I don't know what it's called, little spinning thing where you draw out your number. I like how when they show
like the bingo thing.
Yeah. I like when they show this because it adds a little bit of realism to the kayfabe.
Yeah.
And while we didn't get to see what number they drew, based off of their reaction and their characters, you knew they drew number one. You knew that for them, they wanted to go out there and prove not just by winning, but by beating every tag team that they are the best tag team in the division. And so that wasn't a surprise, but I think everything they did, you know, going back to everyone hitting their assignment, promo work for the Creed brothers, the little backstage interaction when they drew their number, all that was just done perfectly and impeccably for them tonight. And as Darrell is saying, now this is a babyface act that is one of the top babyface acts on the card, which is, when you think about the Diamond Mine, they started out as a heel faction. So the fact that they've turned around so quickly into a babyface faction by just having, even though they've lost a lot of matches, particularly when you look at, you know, Ivy Nile and Roderick Strong, because all their matches have had them just be intense, being just really good in-ring workers and not kind of doing anything superfluous or flowery in the ring and just really going at it and staying true to the character, they won over the fans, not just at Capitol Wrestling Center, but the fans who are watching. And it's just, this is what makes WWE booking so frustrating sometimes, because they have examples like this where they do it well, and then there's so many examples where they just try to skip too many steps.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, kind of going back to what you're saying about them calling themselves, you know, the greatest tag team ever, you kind of compared them to the Ascension doing that. I think, like, you know, at least them, the Creed's doing that and, you know, calling themselves the best tag team in the world and of all time. And, you know, it's kind of believable because of their background and their accolades outside of WWE. So I like it. And I like the way that they did it. Like you said, it was nuanced. It wasn't like it was just super over the top. You know, it's not like they're constantly making reference to the fact that they're the best tag team ever. It's not like it's their tagline or something. But it's, you know, I think it's a good little layer to their characters. Darrell, what else do you have for us? We're going to give you at least one or two more. We do have two other people on the phone waiting to talk tonight.
Okay. I go to the first match of the night. I appreciate it. I love the match and how it was going. Even though the interference, but I understand the interference and that I'm trying to build to, but that match, I would have loved to see the interference, not even interference, but seeing them come out afterwards and let it have been like a clean victory or something like that. So I'm interested to know how they're going to play this, whether it be the reason why they give an out for so Carmelo couldn't win or be able to beat Cameron Grimes or use that as an equalizer so he'll have somebody watching his back. But that first match on the card kind of set it off. And also, we also knew that Pretty Deadly probably could have won because they just announced today that they're going to be doing a stadium show in the UK. So that was another thing as well. But, yeah. What do you guys thought about that first match?
So I really liked that first match tonight. I was kind of – so we're talking about Cameron Grimes or Solo Sikoa. We saw Cameron Grimes go over in 13 minutes, 9 seconds for the North American Championship. I really enjoyed this match. I thought that, you know, it was Cameron Grimes, Solo Sikoa, even though Sikoa is, you know, kind of new to NXT, he's not necessarily new to wrestling. So he's got a great style about himself. Cameron Grimes obviously going to go out there and give you a good match. So I think they were able to deliver on many fronts. I really like the fact that the announce team kept making reference to the bloodline. Cameron Grimes kept making reference to the bloodline. So they're not shying away from the fact that he is a member of, you know, he's Uso's little brother. And, you know, we're probably going to wind up seeing him, you know, join the bloodline at some point. They're making a lot of inferences to, you know, Roman Reigns and the Usos. I like that. You know, we talked about it in the past, like, you know, how they were going to approach it. And I said, either go full bore or don't bring it up at all. And so I'm kind of glad that they're, you know, they're not like shoving it down our throats, but they're not shying away from it either, at least not now. I think they kind of were for a little bit, but at least at this point now they're kind of going full hog with it. So I also thought where this was kind of a babyface matchup, and because they were going so heavy into the bloodline in some cases, you know, on the announce team and just kind of the story of this match and things, I was wondering if this might wind up being a heel turn for Solo Sikoa that would kind of eventually lead him up to the main roster and you know, with the rest of his family. That's obviously not what we saw tonight, but that kind of did crossed my mind a couple times as this match was going on. I'm curious, not curious. I'm interested to see what happens with Cameron Grimes and Carmelo Hayes. I think, you know, I don't necessarily want to see Carmelo regain the title, mostly because I'm really happy to see Cameron Grimes with the title around his belt, around his waist. But I don't obviously want to see a lot of hot-shotting titles either. We're kind of seeing that more and more. So I'd like to have Cameron Grimes hold on to it for just more than one challenger, but we'll see how they book it. Bruce.
A belt holds up your pants. So the thing with Solo Sikoa and Cameron Grimes,
thanks,
what, Bruce. What I don't like specifically is if you're going to continue to have what is the word? If you're going to be just over the top about Solo Sikoa's connection to the bloodline and being related to them, then don't do this BS narrative about him being alone on the streets fighting his way through the thing, because we know that's not the fact. And you're making that even just more obvious by making his connection to the bloodline so obvious. And to me, that just – what's the word? It just breaks kayfabe a little too much for me, because – we know that's not the case. And I know this is a character they're trying to get us to believe in, but one, he doesn't need that backstory to get over. And two, eventually when he does go up, they're going to change his name, because this is not a name that – Solo Sikoa is not going to be something that jives well with how the bloodline operates. So it's probably going to have to be changed. He might just go by Sepha. That's a good name, and that's his name. But excuse me. I don't like how they keep discussing that in conjunction with saying he's part of the bloodline. Like, that just needs to be separated because it just doesn't fit. The match itself, it was fine. I really thought Sikoa might have a chance after he went up to the top rope. But then, you know, at first I was kind of questioning why Trick was out there. But then it made sense after the match, because as much as you were saying, you know, you want Grimes to remain at the title, the fact of the matter is, for Carmelo Hayes, if you look at his character and his presentation, everything he was talking about when he was champion, he made NXT the A show, making the North American Championship the A championship, making himself the A superstar on the show. And because of that, he's not the A superstar. NXT's not the A the A show without him as the A champion, and the A championship is a North American title. So I wanted him originally to disappear for a little bit longer and then go after Braun Breaker, whoever was NXT champion. But I think this route actually is more in line with and more coherent with his character presentation and how his character has been kind of discussing his sort of legacy within NXT.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there. Yeah, I'm not down on it at all. But yeah, Darrell, what else do you have for us tonight?
Okay. Well, my last thing for tonight would be first I want to say, Kelly, I joined you in that riot. I rioted. I kicked the can off the table, so I joined you in that riot. I guess I don't know if that's Dakota's last go around or whatever, but hey, I really wish I could have seen her win a title once, at least one time while she was there. It was an old I match. I haven't seen a good women's match in NXT in probably almost 2 years, but I want to see where they're going to go with this and with that title, and because to anybody who originally watched NXT, really the women, the build of the women and how they have it was the reason of the growth of NXT and the popularity, just to be quite frank with everything. So, and to see it in the state that is kind of, in my opinion, is just, you know, a little disappointing. But I want to see where this goes, and I want to see what happens to Dakota Kai. What do you guys like about that match and everything else?
What do I like about it?
yeah, there's really not much that I necessarily liked about it either. It was there. It was a match. It happened.
Barely a match.
Yeah. It was barely a match. You know, Mandy is man. She can't hold a candle to Dakota Kai in the ring. I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily a Mandy hater. I don't think she's the greatest in the ring by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think she's as bad as some people say she is. That said, the stark, and we talked about this last week as well. Bruce and I talked about this last week. I forget who necessarily brought it up first, but one of us brought it up, that the difference between, like, you know, Cora Jade and Mandy Rose and Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray in the Fatal Four Way at Stand and Deliver, that was like, it was such a stark difference at how much better the two indie wrestlers compared to the two WWE wrestlers really, you know, actually were. And that's kind of, you know, kind of there tonight too. Dakota Kai was the one carrying the match. Kelly, Tom, Bruce, everybody was kind of talking about Dakota Kai, you know, winning the title and everything. And I'll be honest, the whole time I was like, I don't think it's happening. I was hoping, like, there was certainly a big part of me that I want to see Dakota Kai get her name on that NXT title, you know, title list, that, you know, prestigious women's championship becoming a little bit less prestigious as time goes on. But you know what I mean? I would have loved to see that. And I think tonight probably would have been the time to do it from here. Like, I don't really know where you go with her, unless she's going up to the main roster or they're going to do some sort of an angle with Raquel Gonzalez coming back, you know, challenging for the title, or maybe playing heavy to Dakota Kai once again, you know, to kind of run interference for, you know, Toxic Attraction, or run interference for her so she doesn't get attacked by Toxic Attraction, is what I meant to say. You know, maybe there's something like that, and we see one more match between Dakota Kai and Mandy. Yeah, those are just at least a few of the thoughts that are going through my head right now. Bruce, what's in your head?
This match reminded me of a Mandy Rose match when she was on Raw and SmackDown. And yeah, that's not a good thing, because it means she had been improving since coming to NXT, but definitely regressed in her last few matches. With Dakota Kai, for me, aside from the tag team match at Stand and Deliver, it seems like Kai has not necessarily been fully invested in these matches. And I can understand why. She's, you know, most of the time, the last couple of months, she's been working with Toxic Attraction. And Gigi Dolin is better than JC Jane, but they're all in different stages of still needing to develop. And for Dakota Kai, who is someone who was signed to NXT originally because she was already at that stage, and has had many memorable matches and moments within within NXT. It's just, you could see it in the match tonight that she was really trying, but it just, the match looked like it was a half a pace slower than it should have been. And you could see Rose trying to work through where she needed to be, what spots to do in her head, which just came out in the match, and it didn't look good. And unfortunately for Dakota Kai, I'm not sure if, to me, what it seems like because of the post-match is that her and Wendy Choo are going to get back together and go after the tag team titles. And, you know, good for Dakota, because if she wins, then she'll have another title, but she should have been NXT champion, a women's champion, at least once or twice by now. And I just don't think, I wrote in my report, if you don't make her champion tonight, this was before the match, you know, if you don't make her champion tonight, then I don't think this ever got to happen, because you've lost all, this is the worst kind of build for her to a title match that she's ever had. And if you weren't going to pull the trigger on those title matches before, then you're not going to do it at all. So I'm just, how do I put this? Sometimes, you know, we get a little too invested and want the best, for what we think is best for the characters, because we see their talent and they're just not what Vince and Bruce want. And I think Dakota Kai is one of those where we want so much for her that it's just, it's not like it hurts. It's just disappointing.
It hurts.
And it's also very disappointing that they just don't seem to see what almost everyone else seems to see in Dakota Kai. I don't think Raquel Gonzalez or what did they change her name to? Something else. I don't think she's coming back. They seemed to write her off last week with the knee injury and then her debut on SmackDown.
Raquel Rodriguez.
Thank you.
I didn't realize she actually even debuted on SmackDown. I missed it this weekend. Or this Friday.
Yeah, it wasn't a very... She blew off, I think, Los Lotharios, and that was her debut. So, but for me, what I would like to see, I guess, if they're not going to put her in a title match, is Dakota Kai versus Natalya at the next Premium Live event, but that doesn't seem to be the path that they have for Natalya going forward. So it's disappointing to see what they do with Dakota Kai. And if Wendy Choo teaming with her is not the next thing, then I'm guessing they're going to finally make the switch to her, because they did dabble with her on main event for a bit, but then put her back in NXT full time. So I think at this point, you can't do anything else with her in NXT. She just has to go on to SmackDown or Raw. And then when she goes there, I'm even more afraid of what they might do.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I feel like she has to go up. It's kind of an inevitability at this point, or you're seriously going to damage the character. You know, if she stays in NXT much longer, they're going to really either they need to tell some sort of a story to build her back up to being, you know, like that main event level contender, or at least upper card level contender. Right now, you know, her stock is certainly not as high as it once was.
She's in the same spot that Cameron Grimes was before he won the North American Championship ladder match, which was losing every big match they ever get into. Sure, she won the tag team title match, but they lost it right away. It's just, I don't get it.
Yeah, no,
you know,
I agree.
I'll weigh in a bit here. I'm sorry I sound terrible, but I have to weigh in on Dakota Kai.
I figured you would.
It was so hard every single second. She's done jobs to, I would love to look at this. I would love to see if she's jobbed to almost every champion during their championship reign. I'm betting she's done that more than anyone, having done that more than anyone without ever having won the title. I don't see how you don't see it with her, because she's been given so many different roles, so many different assignments, and the crazy thing didn't nail her. Like, that didn't come real easy for her, but she found a way to bring that role to her rather than having to bring herself all the way to the role. She found a way to make that real enough. And it's just like, if you keep giving her this high degree of difficulty and she keeps figuring it out, then what are you even waiting for? It was fine watching her job in matches during the really awesome era. It was weird watching her lose to Raquel in a match that seemed built solely to have Dakota win that championship. But this one really was painful because she lost a match to, honestly, somebody who looked like she shouldn't even be in the business. Like, that's how bad I thought this match was.
She's the worst women's champion in the promotion's history.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down.
This was really, really tough. And I think the women's championship that was once proud becomes – it means so much less with every passing day that she has it. It was tough, but – I will forgive it if this is a call-up, even though I think that it is very sad that she never won this championship. But to go up having never won that championship and then to really, really, really make it big on the main roster, I think is another kind of cool, to have your big first championship win be on the main roster. I don't think that they're going to pull the trigger on her just because they haven't to this point, but I don't have anything left. I don't even have any voice left, as you can probably hear. I'm just trying to talk myself into being okay with what happened tonight.
Bianca Belair got her first title win at WrestleMania. So,
and that is thing with Becky.
My biggest mark out moment in the last 10 minutes is her in the last 10 years is her winning the Royal Rumble. I had no mark-out moments in the last 10 minutes. Biggest in the last 10 years is her winning the Royal Rumble. And it's not even close. I got very emotional. Shinsuke winning the Rumble also. But that was big, 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 big for me when she won the Rumble. And they're not going to go that way with Dakota. If they were going to go that way, we would have seen something before now. But it's like, I don't want them to throw her out there cold like they did with Shotzi and Knox and be like, well, maybe you'll get over, but we're not going to give you anything. But
and
like
Storm.
Matches. But if they don't throw her out there cold, I really think that there could be real reaction to this. But I think they've also done her a disservice by changing her character so much that it's like, what are they going to do when they take her up? Is it going to be so confused, or are they going to actually zero in on something and will actually be the part of her character that's the most worth zeroing in on? Because her early heel character, when she was the overbearing handler of Raquel, is by far the best work she's done, even though she's done a lot of good work. So, I don't know, guys. I'm going to tap out because my voice and my need to cough is coming on strong. But I hope it's the last time I see her here, even though I don't want her to go away.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am as well. Thanks, Kelly. Stick around. Feel free to chime in again if you'd like. But, if not, rest your voice. We'll talk to you later. Darrell, as always, man, thank you very much for calling in. Any quick follow-up before we move on to the next caller?
I would love to see her move up as well. And I just want my NXT women's division back. It's been dreadful for a long time, and I just want it back to at least decency. Every woman that I see them introduce, look like some going back to them days of seeing women who were fresh out of Bikini Magazine, especially the one that made Von Wagner do whatever. So, yeah, I just want my women's division back. But thank you for the conversation. It was good to talk to you guys in there.
All right, man. Very, very, very good. Jesus, let me try that again. Darrell, thank you very much for calling in. I got like stuck in a loop where I couldn't stop saying very there. That was weird. Thanks very much for calling in as always. And definitely good to hear from you, man. Definitely good to hear from you. So we're going to go over to the next caller. I believe this is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Yes, it is.
Hey, Ryan, how are you tonight? What'd you think of the show?
Good show. I have a first question is actually based on what happened at the end of the show. I don't know if I just missed it, but how did Rick Steiner escape the kidnapping by Joe Gacy?
that's a good question. I was kind of hoping
that it kind of last week.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, we brought it up a little bit last week, but, like, you know, this week Bron Breakker said, yeah, you know, my dad's nice and, you know, he's all safe and home. And they didn't really, like, mention how he got home. Like, I kind of would have liked to have seen, you know, like, them show something like, you know, hey, last week after the show went off the air, this is what happened. And it shows Bron Breakker getting back there and, like, you know, maybe Harland and Gacy are nowhere to be found, but at least he's just untying his dad, like breaking, you know, maybe he breaks the chains on the cell or something, and then, you know, rescues his dad, or just like some quick little 30-second vignette where it kind of explained it. I would have liked that, but whatever. Is what it is. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to, you know, I don't really think they're going to explain it other than he just got out. Was there anything that I missed?
Last week, if I remember correctly, the end of the show was Breakker heading to the back. So I think the insinuation was that he was heading back there and then freed his father. Gacy's promo tonight did mention that they tortured his father a bit, but there were no apparent signs of that when they showed his father last week. So maybe they're just trying to...
Maybe they just made them watch a bunch of Mandy Rose matches.
You know, there is that. Kelly did say that Gacy also said, you set your father free, but left something behind. And then that he motioned.
That's right. That's when he burned the ring.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame ring that his dad left behind. And then he retrieved it later on. And then while it was still burning from being in the fire, he put it on his pinky. So basically branding himself with the Hall of Fame ring. I'm not sure how we're supposed to take that. That's what happened. And,
you know, it didn't even, like, I watched him do that, and it didn't even occur to me, you know, dude, that's hot.
But, yes, it is hot. And
yes.
Yeah, so for me, look, I said last week, I think that Gacy is a perfect, you know, first kind of opponent, first kind of rivalry for Breakker. But I think how they're getting there and setting this up is a bit, too cute, I guess. What I will say though is I appreciate how Breakker, as he was leaving, when the person with the camera asked him the question, he just said, "Get that camera out of my face." Like, I appreciated that he was in character still, that he was so incensed that he had no time for any of that and just sped off. So to me, that was another moment of Breakker, as even though I was critical of him early on, he keeps showing these subtle things that are these subtle rapid improvements, like in his promo delivery, in his character presentation, and of course in the ring, that is showing why they're so high on him. So at least on that side, it's good. I did note that it was conspicuous that Harland was not in any of the videos tonight, and he was not present at all on this episode of NXT, even though whenever Gacy has a video, Harland is always next to him. So I'm not sure if we're supposed to read anything into that, or if it's just a happenstance kind of thing. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Yeah, actually, that's right. Harland definitely was nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. All right, Ryan, anything else for us tonight?
My second question is on Wes Lee. With Nash Carter out of the organization, he might possibly be his tag team partner. He'll kill get singles, or could Bodhi possibly sign Trey Miguel? Like, is he locked up in Impact for a long time, or is his deal expiring?
Well, they didn't sign Trey Miguel in the first place because he made some – I don't remember if the comments were misogynistic or homophobic or something, and so that's why he wasn't signed with the other
right.
two when those two were signed. So I don't think they're going to go and sign Trey Miguel. If it was me, I would repackage Wesley. You can keep the same name, but just get rid of the whole MSK thing, get rid of the whole Shaman thing, and repackage him as a singles wrestler because he has the talent to do it. Now, I think he showed with his promos during the whole Shaman thing that he has layers to his character, and if he needs to be a serious babyface, he can. His ring style is definitely one that leans towards babyface. So I think they could definitely repackage him, but I'd say leave him off TV for at least 2 to 3 months and then bring him back in slowly as with some vignettes and then have him debut and just win some quick squash, not squash matches, but some quick matches, kind of like they did with Saray when she first returned, only with a bit better competition. And I think that would be an ideal route for him. And I, 'cause Otherwise, I think he's just going to get released.
So, you know, I got the idea. You send him away for like 3 months or whatever. You let him grow a beard, and he comes back as Wesley's older brother.
Yeah, and then you post a picture with him next to his older brother, just like Ezekiel and Elias did.
Yes, exactly. No, God, please don't do that. Don't do that. One is too much. One of those angles is too much. I'm kind of thinking something along, you know, similar lines is, you know, let him go away, repackage him as a singles wrestler. You know, I feel like between the two, I always gravitated more to Wesley anyway. I kind of liked his style better personally. I think he was more of the star of the group. When I think of MSK, in my head, I think of Wesley first. Like, just that's who I picture. So I think he is, at least in my head, he was the bigger star. So I think he could certainly get away singles. You could package him with somebody else. There's nobody really off the top of my head that's coming to mind, potentially, you know, something like that. Kelly actually just chimed in. This is halfway through what he wrote, but that's caught my eye. He says he thinks that Wes is in deep water. Fans are going to call him guilty by association. There has to be a character pivot to make it work, and there's a good chance the NXT audience will treat him like shit. Lead him off TV until the fans warm to him, and even then, maybe just debut him on Raw or SmackDown. And I can't say I agree. I can't say I agree any more than that. Because I mean that NXT audience, that you know, former Full Sail crowd.
Really led by one person.
I know, Tom. Tom was actually in the audience tonight.
No,
Tom was in the building. Tom was in the building tonight for the first time in over 2 years since before the pandemic. I think it was like March 12th of 2020 or something like that. I don't know why that date sticks in my head, but it sounds about right.
March 13th is when everything went to hell.
I know March 13th was the first day I did work from home for COVID. So, yeah, that's why that just kind of sticks in my head. But anyway, that NXT, you know, former Full Sail crowd can be pretty brutal. So I kind of agree. Yeah, I think the crowd could potentially turn on him if they were to bring him back right now. If they, bring him up to Raw or SmackDown or have a complete repackage of him where you change his look, maybe you put him under a hood. I don't know, but repackage him in some way where you kind of separate him from MSK, from Nash Carter, from all of the bullshit that Nash Carter was all told, kind of toiled up in. Yeah, I really feel bad for Wesley. You know, they just won the tag titles again. You know, not that like I really wanted to see them win the tag titles, as we talked about.
I should have won even without hindsight, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. They were the wrong winners, you know, even without Nash Carter thinking he's Hitler. Whatever. But I feel bad for Wesley. You know, it's not his fault, but unfortunately, sometimes as a tag wrestler, you got to take the heat for the shit that your tag partner does. It's just kind of the way of the world sometimes, and in the wrestling world, I guess. Ryan, anything else? Like I said, we do have one other person on the line tonight, so we give you one more thing.
My final question is on something Cora Jade said tonight, was that I guess her parents can get front row tickets. I didn't realize it was that big of a deal to get a front row ticket, because the first show I went to for WWF, I actually was in the front row. I guess I had connections, being friends with the Ross Perot impersonator kid, hooked me up. But my question is it really that hard to get front row tickets? Because it sort of blows my mind, the first show I went to, I had front row tickets.
So I wouldn't be surprised if she was just saying that to say it, for storyline purposes. But I do know Tom's talked about in the past, it kind of, certain people getting preferential treatment and things like that. I know that there is a Facebook group. Of course, Tom's not here to talk about this anymore. But I think it's a Facebook group where there, are all like the Full Sail. Well, I still call them Full Sail, but the NXT taping regulars, which Tom is, he was part of that group. And I think I remember him saying something in the, you know, in the past of like them getting emails or him knowing of groups getting emails for tickets before, like, you know, even pre-sales and things like that. So I don't think it's necessarily like super, super hard to get a, you know, front row ticket. If you really want one, it's probably going to be expensive, but I do know that they do have some, you know, some fans that get some preferential treatment for being regulars.
Well, if I remember correctly, she was discussing her parents being there at Stand and Deliver, which was in Dallas. So, and that makes it even harder because there are people who are just going to buy tickets for the whole weekend. And so it could be more difficult to get front row tickets because, you know, these tickets go on sale basically a year out and then people will just pre-purchase them. And if you don't know you're going to be on the card, it's going to be hard to find open seats available or even for the company to get seats available for you. So I could see it being true. I also don't really care too much, but I'm glad he brought up the Jade promo because, you know, Corey Jade is someone who I just can't buy. And I don't really see, you know, her as a championship contender. So when they made it seem like she was going to be Mandy Rose's next challenger after tonight, or because I think her promo was after the title match, I just really wasn't sold on it because I don't see her as a championship contender. So I'm glad that they made the pivot. Her promo started out a bit rough, but she found her footing, and I think she gave a pretty solid babyface promo. So that was good. I really liked the pivot with Natalya coming in, and, you know, when she entered, she got a huge pop. And I even noted, like, isn't Natalya a heel? And, you know, we saw that later on that, yes, she's definitely a heel still. So there's that. But I really like how Natalya, even though it was telegraphed, you knew it was going to happen, how she roped in Cora and how she roped in the crowd there with her emotions, as fake as they were, to just slap the hell out of Cora Jade and set up their eventual match. Now, it's interesting that Cora isn't the first match that Natalya is going to have because Natalya, as she went through the back and all the women were sitting in some kind of lounge, I think, Tatum Paxley approached her and challenged her to a match, and they announced that match for next week. So Natalya's first match back in NXT since, I think, the title match against Charlotte, Tatum Paxley. And that's interesting because my guess is that Natalya was able to, with her veteran status and her kind of cachet in the company, I'm assuming she was able to choose who she wants to work with. And I assume she chose Jade. And based on the interaction, I assume she chose Tatum Paxley because she sees something in those two. And, you know, especially for Cora Jade and Tatum Paxley and anyone who works with her in NXT, especially this crop, not anyone who was there with Black and Gold, so not Io Shirai, not Kaylee Ray, even though they could still learn. This crop of women in 2.0 right now are going to learn so much from Natalya in terms of not just wrestling, not just being a technician, not just your character work, but WWE style and how to be successful within WWE. And a lot of these women wrestlers who are really newly signed, you know, a lot of the new PC class has been athletes signed from different sports who don't have wrestling experience. So having Natalya there is going to do wonders for the women's division because we keep lamenting the quality dip and since the change to 2.0 in the women's division especially. Having this one person there is going to make such immense differences. And I think we're going to see those differences sooner rather than later, maybe within 2 months instead of just like 6 months, even though we'll definitely see the long-term benefits as well. So I like Natalya's presence there, the reception she received, even though the crowd can be very, very hit or miss, and how she kind of just set her character and grounded it within being back in NXT and showing people that she still has what it takes to be the best. So I really,
you mean the boat?
I think Cora, you know, and people playing the parts well, I think Cora played the awestruck hyperventilating kind of fan pretty well. And so I think keeping Cora away from Mandy Rose right now is the best option. And I don't think there could have been anyone better aside from maybe an Io Shirai or a Kaylee Ray than a Natalya. And so I'm really excited to see what happens with Natalya in NXT. And hopefully she's here longer than Dolph Ziggler. I do wonder if they're doing a one main, quote unquote, main roster wrestler at a time at NXT, or if they're going to start doing one main roster wrestler per division. So one men's singles wrestler, one women's singles wrestler, and then a men's and women's tag team, and see maybe if they got going to add more that way, or just stick with the one at a time right now, because it's working. It's really working, but I do think they have room to add a little more. It's just, what point are there diminishing returns?
Yep, no, exactly. I was kind of wondering the same thing. You know, are they going to do, you know, just kind of one at a time, or, you know, one per division? Even if they do one per division, right, they bring down, you know, somebody from the male roster, somebody female roster from the main roster, you bring them down even at the same time, you know, to work completely different programs or whatever. I think that could still work. You know, we've talked about this, you know, quite a bit now, you know, with AJ Styles coming down, Dolph Ziggler coming down, the Mysterios coming down. You know, I like this. It feels more like, you know, NXT was, you know, 8 years ago. Hey, there's a plug for 8 years back, you know, go VIP. you know, especially about seven, 8 years ago, you know, where you had a lot of, you know, you'd CM Punk, you had John Cena, you had Natalya showing up, you know, with that match against, against Paige. I'm sorry, not Paige, Charlotte. I like it. It kind of feels like that. It also helps, as you were talking about, it helps a lot of the talent, you know, kind of learn from these veteran, you know, superstars. You know, one of the things that you brought up too is one of, you know, there's still some veteran talent in NXT. You know, you've got Io Shirai, you've got Kaylee Ray. There's still a few people kicking around that, you know, are from the indies or whatever. And certainly, yes, you can definitely learn from them. But somebody like Natalya coming down, she's been in the WWE system for so long. Like you said, you know, she's going to be able to kind of help teach not just the WWE way of doing things in the ring, but a lot of the politics. There's just a lot of weird politics backstage in that company. And she's been able to handle it for quite some time now. You know, so I think she's going to be a big help back there for not just the women, but the men. I'm sure there's probably some men back there she'll work with as well. I think it's a good call, and I'm really curious to see what she's going to do. I think it's probably going to be, you know, a similar length of time as Dolph Ziggler, if I had to guess. You know, maybe like a month, month and a half, 2 months tops. But I'm excited. I'm excited about it. I'm a big fan of hers, and you know, she's kind of, at least recently, been doing just a lot of like lower card stuff in the main roster. So it'd be cool to see her do some more meaningful work here on NXT. All right, Ryan, thank you very much for chiming in tonight. As always, we'll talk with you again soon, I'm sure. We'll go over to the next caller. We have area code 312. You should have just heard unmuted. So if you did, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Sean from Chicago.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name.
Sean from Chicago.
Sean, okay. How are we doing tonight, Sean?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Besides, we all know that Natalya will inevitably be fed to Cora Jade. And
oh yeah,
as much as I like so many of the talent in 2.0, I really think they went overboard with the gimmick, but it happens. It is what it is, and I like a lot of the talent. But I two things. I want Dakota Kai to stay, because I think there is still a little bit left to do with this. There's always her being on the actual top and getting rid of Mandy Rose. You can flip Mandy Rose into a baby face if you have Dakota Kai kind of kick her out of her own group. And you can switch up Dakota Kai and get something new out of her, because that's not her character, nor has she been a toxic attraction type. But she has depth, and she could do that. Two, Cora Jade, and please, I am not, listen to me on this, I am not joking. She is the worst professional wrestler actress I have ever seen in my entire life. I've watched wrestling my entire life. I'll be 40 this year. Cora Jade is atrocious. She didn't even, for a second, sell me on what she was saying. There's not 1 second she won't be wooded to death on the main roster. Not 1 second.
Yeah. No, we've talked about this on the show too. I think it might have been last week, a week before, about Cora Jade. Actually, it was, because it was Tom. I remember talking with Tom, so it wasn't last week. It was at least a few weeks ago. But we were talking about this. Cora Jade, when she's in the ring, she definitely seems to have some issues getting her lines out. And you know, kind of to your point, she is not the world's greatest actress. When she's behind the scenes, you know, doing some sort of a pre-taped promo or a pre-taped vignette or something like that, she seems to be a little bit more comfortable. But you know, still, again, yeah, not the greatest. She's got a lot of room to improve. You know, one of the things that, you know, that Bruce was just talking about, you know, with the last caller, Ryan, you know, about just not being able to believe Cora Jade. And yeah, I kind of meant to chime in there too. I'm in the same boat. I can't really buy into her as like a credible champion. I want to, mostly because I don't want to ever see anybody fail. She really doesn't
she
look
doesn't
like a wrestler.
Even, like, now, I know a lot of people give Adam Cole a bunch of crap. And I'm – look, I like different body types, you know. I liked Bam Bam Bigelow and Vader, you know, Kevin Owens. I don't – Sasha Banks didn't look like a wrestler to me at first until I saw her wrestle, and it blew my mind. And, you know, that was one of the first times I watched NXT. But Cora Jade, on the other hand, man, like, there's, like, no definition of, like, even a person. Like, where her – does she have muscles? Does she know what muscles are?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that with Cora Jade, not just necessarily, you know, the muscles and things like that, because, you know, yeah, again, it's the act entirely, but not just that. For me, it's she looks so young. I mean, she is young. But it's also part of the reason, like, I can't buy into Dominic Mysterio as a credible
well,
wrestler.
He's bad, got, too.
He's bad, but it's also – he's just
if
such –
if he hit the gym,
I say baby,
he would convince
baby
you
face.
More.
Right. But
if
he's
Dominic
also got
Mysterio
such a
looked
baby
like John Cena, you would believe him a lot more.
Oh, no, for sure.
You know?
For sure.
Like, it goes a long way. I mean, I get it. He's kind of – I wouldn't say sloppy, but there was a reason Vader used to hit people in it. It's so it would look real because it was real. And there was a couple things in the tag tournament that just weren't – they didn't go right because they weren't actually hitting each other. I get it. You don't want to look like Bianca Belair after WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But that's the job. That's what makes it great. It's the job. And they don't want to get hit anymore, and especially in the women's division. Especially in the women's division, it's not too much more, but it's a little bit more noticeable. It's more egregious then.
I think it's just the talent, Bruce, sorry about that. The talent is just not there like it used to be too in the women's division. You know, like we were talking about earlier with Darrell, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, women's division was the reason you turned on NXT. And now that's far from the case. So I think a lot of it too is just the talent is not necessarily there. And we're seeing that, you know, we're seeing that on camera. Sorry, Bruce, go ahead.
You know, Bret Hart is my favorite wrestler of all time. And he would always say that, I pride myself in being safe and making it look real, even though I don't make contact. So I don't necessarily think you have to make contact, but the women's tag tournament, especially, there were a lot of times where you could see the kind of the sequences being thought out and you could see a lot of light on moves. So I understand that point, but you also don't want to actually injure your opponent. So there is a fine balance they have to straddle. And Tom would be nice to talk to here because he's seen Harland a lot and talks about how Harland makes it look like it hurts, but he's really doing it very safely, not actually injuring his opponent. So there are people in NXT who can do that. It's just within the women's division.
But Tom
right now,
likes Cora Jade,
featuring. Well,
but Tom likes Cora Jade, too.
Cora Jade, I do think her promo tonight was started out bad, but she did get solid at the end. I just don't really, they have to do more for me to actually buy her as someone who I could think of legitimately. Like, there's no way I see her as more of a championship contender than Dakota Kai. It's just not
right.
going to happen
yeah,
unless they
exactly.
do some wholesale work with Cora Jade where she is winning gritty, resilient matches that go 12, 15 minutes and she's the underdog and she pulls it out. Unless they do all that, she's not going to me be someone that I look at as someone who will beat Mandy Rose for the title.
No, she reminds me
again.
Kelly's alive. What were you saying?
I'm going to step in again. And I only bring this up because there's the question of acting. I went to school for acting. It's what I do. And I'm just like, I will mention that now is a really, really hard time for NXT, for someone who went to school for, as somebody who went to school for acting, for money, watching most of wrestling makes me sad because none of them, almost like the best ones would be kind of acceptable in the circles that I've acted with, like kind of acceptable. That's the level we're looking for. Cora's bad. I'm not sure she's even bottom three in NXT.
She's horrible. But she's not acting. She's just that awful at whatever she's doing. It's the difference between acting and whatever she's doing, and it's bad. She's not even playing. I don't know what you. Cora. One thing I found that I should never do again is watch something twice. Sometimes, because I got kids, I got a lot of them, I got to rewind stuff because I didn't hear it. And I had to rewind what Cora Jade said because I didn't hear it. And it was worse. Her timing, her voice, she sounds bored or like she's on something. She's really bad. Maybe she's not top, bottom three. Maybe she isn't. Maybe I'm exaggerating. But, her whole look and presentation is just not right. It's not that she can't pull off that character. It's just that something's not connecting. Something's just not connecting at all.
Yeah, I wish I could say, it would be nice for me if I could say, well, this is the worst actor on the brand. the fact that I'm seeing her stuff and I'm like, no, it's not so bad because there are way worse is very disturbing to me. There shouldn't be that many who are having this much trouble. And that's why you don't hire these people sight unseen. Or, better yet, just keep them the hell off of TV for a while until they're...
Exactly.
Because, Nikita Lyons, for me, is genuinely unwatchable. She's that bad to me. I don't like any single thing about her act. But that's...
You used the term unwatchable.
Yeah,
I think you mean something else. She's watchable, but she's watchable.
And
I believe.
Like,
but I think
that would be something.
Word.
But she's also not. She's awful. She's just not bringing anything to the show for me. And if she, but they're doing her a bigger disservice. I'm like, I don't blame her for this. I blame the people that are rushing her to television. When there's clearly not a television ready thing here, I understand that NXT 2.0 is meant to go back to basics and be a place to groom new stars, but she's just too early in this process to be on TV, and that could hurt her long term, really long term.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And again, we've talked about this at length on this podcast, but Nikita Lyons, I don't see it at all. She's athletic, sure, but her moveset in the ring is atrocious. Her acting ability is atrocious.
Boxing is atrocious.
Yeah, oh my God, that's terrible. Like her entrance.
But Legend is a million times worse.
Legend actually has something. You can see it, and she has a presence about her, which Nikita Lyons does not have. And I discussed that last week. You can see with Lash Legend, her background in basketball, but also her confidence, her kind of persona just exudes to the screen. And she has more of it than I think Nikita Lyons will ever have. And so for me,
didn't she kill somebody 2 weeks ago? She put somebody on the stretcher.
Well, it was a bad bump by Amari Miller. Both of them are green, so it's kind of a mutual thing to me in that point. But in her match with Nikita Lyons, there was no – Nate and I last week talked about how the match actually went a lot better than we thought. And to me, I'll start giving Nikita Lyons a chance once she hits her cyclone kick and then does her finisher on the same side instead of walking all the way over to the other side to hit it because she likes how her butt looks on that side.
Yeah, exactly. Tom said it before, she just comes across as an Instagram model who wants to wrestle. And that's all I see her as. That's all I see her as. All right. I forget what the original question was at this point, but any follow-up?
I don't think it was a question. I think I've dogged Cora Jade the way I planned on it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I knew we were talking about somebody else. Cora Jade.
Yeah. Here's the question. Do you think NXT 2.0 is too much too soon for people? Like, is it a sink or swim system and people are just sinking? And long-term, do you think it's good to – I know they want to get away from indie wrestlers, and I don't blame them because you want athletes first that you can kind of mold into professional wrestlers. And I understand all of that. But you don't get the things that you get with someone who's actually been a professional wrestler before somewhere, somehow. Do you think that that's too much too soon, that they're entirely too green and that it hurts them in the long run? In the sink or swim system?
So in my opinion, like, I yes and no. Because, like, yes, in terms of the fact that, like, they're green in some cases. Some of them are not ready for TV. You know, for instance, Bron Breakker, I feel like, was ready for TV. He came out. There was still some work he needed to be done. He was still a little bit green. But, like, he you could tell he had something about him the first time you saw him on TV. I wasn't super sold on him at first, and I definitely – his name certainly didn't help out. But you could kind of tell he had a presence about him, and he had something special and unique. And there are certain people within NXT that you can kind of pick out, you know, that have that as well. But yeah, I mean, especially where NXT, we got so used to seeing some of the best wrestlers, you know, in the world for a while there, you know, as they were trying to build it up to be kind of like, you know, a third brand. Now it's they've completely changed it. You're not seeing that same caliber of wrestling. So in some people's minds, you know, it may end up hurting because, you know, they're tuning in to see great wrestling and it's like, wait, what's this? The brand, the 2.0 rebrand has been going on long enough now where I'm sure most wrestling fans that are paying attention to NXT are aware of it. So I think it hurts them in that respect, but by the same token, NXT 2.0 isn't all about wrestling anymore. It's sports entertainment. It's Raw and SmackDown Lite. So you don't have to be, you know, a five-star in the Tokyo Dome match level, you know, caliber wrestler to succeed in the NXT product. Unfortunately, that's what was causing people to fail on the main roster, as stupid as that sounds. So I think in terms of some fan perception, yes, it could certainly hurt some people. But I think in terms of the way that they're trying to present NXT and the way that they are kind of building these stars to then just kind of be able to just pluck them out of NXT and put them into the main roster, I think overall that is not going to necessarily hurt them long run. Bruce.
So at first I thought the question was referring to fans, and as Nate said, it's been long enough now that the core audience is kind of around, you know, maybe 550 to 600,000 people a week at best. So I think that's fine. To me, when it comes to the wrestlers, it really is just going to come down to them refilling the roster with people that they can have things like squash matches with, or just enhance the matches, or just having a roster full of people that, because, you know, some people develop quicker than others. And so the bigger the roster you have to fill in these spots, the better it's going to be, so that you don't have, say, a Nikita Lyons out there or a Cora Jade out there when they're not necessarily ready in terms of the full character presentation. And, you know, with Lyons, it's more than just that. But I really just think that once they spring in some more of these recent PC classes that they've signed, particularly the ones since the NIL deal went in, including Gable Stevenson and whatnot, even though he's going straight to the main roster. But, you know, his brother, I think, is in NXT, and then there are a bunch of other college athletes they signed. I think once you start seeing more of them kind of at least hit the spot where they can be on TV, maybe just as enhancement talent, then it'll be better. It's just right now the roster is so shallow that they kind of have no choice after the cuts they made to put these people on TV because of their sort of renewed mandate of being more developmental. So I just believe they're going to sign, you know, maybe four or five of these PC trainees come up, and next thing you know, it doesn't seem like it's as bad as it was. that's all I think really needs to happen, is just having some more talent to choose from and put on the show to sort of, in AEW style, have more of a an ensemble cast to help with the development of the rest of the group.
Yep. All right. Sean, anything else?
Yeah, one last question. Well, I guess two. One is, who would you pick off of the main roster? I mean, not main roster, I'm saying. Who would you pick to go to the main roster right now? Natalya showing up makes me think that a Zion Quinn could really use a manager like her, and he could be somebody you could just, you know, put a title on. Not immediately, but you could build him there. He's got a Karrion Kross thing going on, but that would be like a pick of mine to go to the main roster. And if he's not so good, then he looks good getting squashed. Who cares? but my bigger question is, what do you do with this audience? Because at the beginning of the show, they were, and I talked to Tom, and he was saying, I was DMing him on Twitter, and he was like, well, it's a big Solo Sikoa fan base out here. And then he, you know, Grimes said something about the bloodline, you know, and he booed that. But, like, you're booing a babyface champion. And this ain't the first time. They booing Braun. So what – it was better. And I know I'm in the minority on this, or it just might be me. It was way better, not in NXT itself, but wrestling, when it had no fans, you didn't have anybody messing up your story just to get over themselves. And it was great because you could just, yeah, you know, you could just listen to the story, let them do it, and let them work, and you had no input. And I think the most selfish thing I hear people say is, oh, well, you know, it's better than fans are back. It's like, why? So you could say what or boo the baby face when you clearly shouldn't be? Like, the fans don't play along, and my question is, how do you get them to? Or do you just implement rules and just stop it? Do you just go full Nazi on them and say, you can't do this, you can't do that? Or do you I was going to say groom the audience, but that's what it would be. Do you somehow groom them? Sorry by the word. Do you somehow get them there another way?
You just triggered a bunch of conservatives, man.
I hear what you're saying. Like, this audience has always been, you know, this TV audience has always been kind of troublesome. Like, yeah, you know, sometimes you got to love them because, you know, they are so passionate. They do add, they will add some positives to the show, but sometimes the negatives that they add certainly outweigh them.
They've never been this bad. Like, they're just, clearly,
it became worse once MSK was signed.
Yeah.
That was weird for me, too. I would constantly ask Tom, like, what's going on, man? I know you're there. Why do they hate them? And he would, you know, we discussed a few things, and, like, now they're done with. But then they turn around and they boo Bron Breakker, and I'm like, so what's up with Bron Breakker? Did he, like, kill his babysitter when he was 8 or something? Like, I just don't know what's going on. Like, they've never been this bad, and it's really weird to watch the product when you know what should be going on, but they're clearly defiant.
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, I mean, Bruce Pritchard says, you know, he said quite a bit on, like, his podcast and things, is, you know, fans pay to show up. They can kind of do what they want to do. So I kind of have that mindset in a way. Because I'm like, you know what, if you paid your ticket, you want to show up and you want to start chanting for Michael Jordan at an NXT show, well, hey, you paid your ticket, why not? It's annoying, and everybody else probably hates you, but I guess that's your prerogative. But by the same token, they kind of have to find a way to lead the crowd. Not necessarily groom the crowd, but you know, like, lead the crowd into the direction they want them to go. They're not going to get them every single time. You know, I mean, this is some, even on the main roster, you go from place to place to place, and certain people are going to get bigger reactions based on, you know, if they had a, you know, an indie career there, or if they happen to live there, or they lived there, or they have some sort of tie to that area. Yeah, I was kind of just thinking, back, what was it, 97, 98, when Bret Hart, he'd go up to Canada and he was like the most beloved person in the world. But any other place in the U.S. that he'd go, he was, this vile heel. So it's something that, you kind of deal with fans, in general. But I do think that NXT has to try and figure out a better way to lead those fans. A lot of the booking that they've had in NXT 2.0 has kind of been, let's say, basic booking. Like, a lot of the stories they've been telling are kind of predictable. Like, we talked about earlier tonight with Pretty Deadly winning the titles tonight. That, I mean, if you didn't see that coming, whatever, I guess. But, if you didn't see it coming, I guess shame on you. But there should be, I don't know what I'm trying to say. There should be a way that they're able to kind of lead that audience a bit more just by trying to do some better storytelling and not go back to a lot of these just basic generic storylines over and over again. Bruce.
So I'll add that regardless of whatever event, whether it's a sporting event or a concert, if you purchase tickets, there's always a rules and etiquette on the back of the ticket or when you purchase your ticket in an email saying what you can and can't do, right? And chants in wrestling, I understand, are there. This crowd, though, they think they're the ECW crowd, but the ECW crowd wasn't there to just put themselves over, right? This crowd only puts themselves over. And one of the biggest issues is that they've made this group, this crowd for NXT specifically, so insular, so exclusive that people within that bubble think that they can basically do whatever they want and really won't face any repercussions because they really haven't. Like, the only time Izzy's dad ever got anything against him was when Lindsay Dorado threatened him and he didn't want any of that smoke. So it's just this crowd, especially last week, is so insufferable. And it's not going to change. I don't see it changing as long as they keep allowing the same people. It doesn't matter how much you try and nudge them one way or the other, because of their set thoughts and ideologies around wrestling and about their own characters and how self-inflated they are about who they are as the crowd, it's not going to change unless you don't let them in there. Kelly said, find a new crowd. I said, bring back the Thunderdome. Something, because especially for these much more green towns who need that space to develop, the negative fan reaction, the heat you get for not doing well as opposed to being a good heel, that could be career breaking for a lot of wrestlers, or just set them back a lot, and that could be a big confidence breaker. And these fans they're not going to do it, but if they truly care about the product, tell themselves they advocate for, then they would just shut their mouths and go along with what they're supposed to go along with. Like, not saying that you're trying to be have blind faith and just be a sheep, but it's okay to show your discontent when the discontent is warranted, like with Dakota Kai not winning the title tonight. But booing your babyface champion just because you don't think they should have won, or cheering on Dolph Ziggler because you like to think you're a smart mark even though you're not smart at all, that's not good. And it really diminishes the quality of the shows you're watching when what you see dichotomous from what you're hearing from the crowd.
I had a point that I was just thinking about, and then you said dichotomous, and I was like, that's a large word, and then stopped talking, and I completely lost my train of thought.
My train of thought.
Okay, cool.
I was just watching WWE Evil, and I was thinking, people didn't act that way when they were being stabbed in the crowd. I'm dead serious. Like, it used to be a real thing where, if you acted out of line, you would get stabbed. And it was like, just knowing how palpable it was that somebody could be actually injured in that way, people, they didn't always take it that far, but the crowd kind of knew their place. Even though they would do something like that, which is horrible, they still knew their place even then. Now it's just kind of whatever.
And you look at the ECW crowd, they were there to put the promotion on their wrestlers over, not putting themselves as the crowd over as much as we see with NXT, because there were definitely times when the ECW crowd would do that. But for the most part, it was about the promotion and the wrestlers and the passion they had for that promotion.
I remembered what I was going to say now. So what, you know, one of the, and I'm kind of just playing devil's advocate because I agree. I think they're insufferable for the most part. Every once in a while, I think they add something to the show, but for the most part, I'm like pretty much right on board with everything you guys are saying. But I think in WWE's eyes, they're just a passionate crowd, and they, all they care about is that passion gets portrayed through TV, whether it's necessarily the story they want to tell or not. They, you know, is a small arena. There are just, you know, a handful of people that are in that building. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but, you know, I mean, it can't be more than a couple hundred. Mm-hmm. So just to see a passionate crowd on TV in a small building, kind of making it look like a bigger deal than it might be, they probably think it's a plus. Like WWE, knowing them and the way that they think, they might like be like, no, we love these guys. You know, they react to everything. Because, like, the worst thing, you know, Draco Anthony tonight, Draco Anthony got the worst thing any wrestler could get, nothing. When he made his entrance, he got nothing. He didn't get a single, like it didn't seem like there was anybody on their feet. There was nobody chanting for him, nobody booing him. He got nothing. They didn't care about him. And that's the worst thing. So, at least in kind of like that devil's advocate type of a way, I would rather see the Full Sail crowd going against what like the story is and kind of even trying to put themselves over than just sit there on their hands and not react. So I guess it could be worse is what I'm trying to say. Well, it could be worse.
Okay. Going back to his first question with the whole Natalya Zion Quinn thing, Zion Quinn is a lot of help in a lot of places. So I don't think he's main roster ready. To me, the person that could go to main roster right now and fill in as an admirable heel is Grayson Waller. I said it before and I'll say it again. His floor is the Miz. Yep. And if your floor is the Miz, you're going to have a great career. You know, that's a 2-time Grand Slam champion. He Absolutely. Has that kind of persona and attitude and demeanor about him. And he believes in his character, which the Miz believes in his character. And that's how you're going to get over on the main roster, especially. Waller's not the best wrestler right now, but he's good enough to be, I mean, the Miz isn't a great wrestler, but he's good enough to have had a 2-time Grand Slam career. So, to me, it's Grayson Waller. I know there's LA Knight, other people, but I'm trying to go a little bit, not too far off the beaten path, but just a little bit, say Grayson Waller.
Grayson Waller is certainly somebody that came to mind. Carmelo Hayes, I think, mm-hmm. is like 95% there. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, he's at a point where you could take him out. He could just learn the rest on the fly. He's certainly somebody. Then Escobar. I could actually, yep. I'd like to see Escobar up to the main roster, although I'm thinking I want to see him stay in NXT for a little bit and potentially feud with Tony D'Angelo in a stable if Tony D'Angelo puts one together, but that's just fantasy booking. Anyway, Sean, anything else, any follow-up on that, or should we move on to emails?
No, that was all great. Just one last thing. Everybody go to MMATorch.com and search for it on YouTube. We are getting things back up and running. We got a couple shows going. We got Weekend Warrior. That should be out tomorrow. You can look for that every week. It's great being on the show. I like that you guys don't screw around. And you just tell it like it is. So it's always great to be here.
All right, man. Definitely appreciate it. All right, man. Take care. Have a good one. All right. I almost just ended the call. I almost just ended the episode rather than put him on mute. That was weird. Okay. So let's go over to emails and then we're going to run for the hills. I know there's probably a few things that we haven't talked about. However, I actually have to go to the office and be there super early tomorrow. So we're not going to probably touch on everything tonight because, well, I said so. So let's go over the emails. We're going to go to JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. I've officially gotten to the point where NXT is actively hurting the product for me. They seem to regularly cheer and boo as contrarians just to garner attention from themselves. I guess this sounds familiar. Weren't we just talking about this?
Uh-huh.
He says, also, I'm pretty sure the Uso chants for Solo Sikoa. They literally made a point in commentary that says Solo says he doesn't run with the day one types and the constant dog barking for Bron Breakker. It comes to a point where it comes to the point where this becomes a highlighted part of their act and defines and simplifies them as members of the bloodline, or Rick Steiner's son. Is there any way that NXT can get a better crowd rotation if they aren't willing to travel to smaller national venues again? As always, love the show and go VIP. He also sent two more emails as a follow-up, so we'll just go into those. Also, we're not just Toxic Attraction. We Are the Attraction is one of the worst overall catchphrases I've heard in a long time. And finally, why do they keep branding tonight as Championship Tuesday? Stand and Deliver was a week and a half ago. When every week becomes a special, it actually lessens how special things like big matches or championship matches feel. Couldn't agree with you more there. I think they were just calling it Championship Tuesday because they had all the titles on the line tonight. So it wasn't really like branded Championship Tuesday. They were just going, you know, hey, Championship Tuesday because all titles are on the line. So, yeah, we kind of talked a little bit a lot about this, you know, with the last caller. But I think, I don't know, they got to do something. They got to do something with the crowd. I think, but I don't think anything is going to happen until, you know, they, if they ever do, start, you know, traveling again. That's when, you know, you kind of get those differing crowds. You're not going to get the same people unless you get weirdos that are traveling to the shows. I know people do that, but whatever. I don't see how the heck do you live? How do you have a life and travel around with the WWE, and where do you get your money? I want that money. Anyway, I'm going on a tangent here. But yeah, they got to do something. I don't think anything's going to really happen until, like I said, that they can get other crowds in front of, you know, the NXT wrestlers. You know, that particular crowd is, well, that particular crowd. Anything to add to that, or should we move on, Bruce?
Just move on.
All right. So the doctor is in. This is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Dare I say that tonight's episode was an improvement over last week's? I don't have a whole lot to say this week, but I was impressed with the main event. Creed Brothers definitely showed me quite a bit tonight, and even though the chicken poop heels stole victory from the jaws of defeat, I feel strongly that the tag team champions will be around the waist of the Creed sometime soon. What were your big takeaways from the Gauntlet match other than the 1v1 rematch between Pretty Deadly and the Creeds? What are the storylines would you like to see come out of that match? Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. So, yes, tonight's episode was certainly an improvement over last week's. Last week, I couldn't find many nice things to say about the show. excuse me. I didn't have a lot to say nice about the show, so, you know, I didn't. Said a lot of bad things about the show. Tonight, Creed Brothers were, I think they were the highlight of the Gauntlet match for me. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like any other storylines that I'd like to see come out of this. I want to see something more with Briggs and Jensen. Cause like I said, they're starting to win me over a little bit, but I'm not sure exactly what yet. Who are they? I forget who they're feuding with. I don't know. Can you think of anything, Bruce? I'm drawing a blank.
So when it comes to this Gauntlet match, it was pretty straightforward. There really wasn't anything that happened either in or between each team that set the other team up to feud with them. The only thing that happened was Electra Lopez shoving Fallon Henley, which has been an ongoing issue, right? So it seems like they're still going to go with the LDF and the Briggs and Jensen feud, including Electra Lopez and Fallon Henley. But you know, when this match was first announced, my initial thought was, do they even have five teams to put in this match with the absence of Imperium and MSK? So that was my first initial thought. But first initial is very redundant. I'm sorry about that. But they, you know, Grayson Waller and Sanga are a very new team, but the other teams at least have been teaming together for a bit. I think it was, you know, as we discussed, it was laid out well. It was predictable, but everyone hit their marks. Everything went A to B to C to D, and it worked. They, even though it's predictable, this, you know, the New Day model for Gauntlet matches just works. It just works for the baby faces. And so it wouldn't have worked if, you know, say Brooks and Jensen were, or Brooks and, I just pulled the name.
Ah, there you go.
If Briggs and Jensen were the last team, it only worked because it was Pretty Deadly or Waller and Sangha as the last team to do it and win. So, you know, I think the tag team division, it's in a better place than I thought it was heading into tonight. And that largely has to do with the presence of the Creeps.
I think I've killed maybe 11 mosquitoes since we went live. I don't know why, where they're coming from or what, but they're coming to get me. Yeah, you know, at first, like you're talking about, I had no idea who they were going to actually fill this tournament out with. When we were talking about that, you, Tom Kelly and I are talking about that on Twitter, in our group chat. It's like, grizzled young vets. I feel like, and when I was trying to even think of tag teams, like I listed out some tag teams in our group chat, the grizzled young vets weren't even there. And Kelly was like, wait, what about the grizzled young vets? And I was like, holy shit, what about the grizzled young vets?
I forgot about them.
The fact that we forgot about the Grizzly Young Vets is absolutely criminal. Like, we were talking about them being NXT tag team champions, like, pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic hit, and they kind of got screwed because they were overseas, and then they came back, and they were really a non-factor, and they're still really a non-factor. I think it's kind of criminal they weren't in this match, and they're not doing more with this tag team because, like, they've certainly got a lot to offer to the tag division. And I feel like that their style would have kind of helped to improve this match. I don't know who I would have replaced them with. Maybe I would have just made it a six-team gauntlet if put them in there. But, whatever.
I just want Zach Gibson to come out next week and be like, you thought we were the ones who attacked you. You stupid Americans. You can't even tell the difference in accents between a Scouser and wherever the hell Pretty Deadly are from. And just, go on about that and kind of Creed Brothers about that.
British on them.
Because they sounded British. It had to be GYV. And I think there's still something there to work with between the Creed and GYV based off of that storyline. So I would like to see that. But I wonder if they're really just getting GYV ready for a main roster call-up. They should have won the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic last year when MSK won. This year, when it was announced, we knew the Creed Brothers were going to win, but it was just doesn't feel right that GYV didn't win last year. So I just think that with the lack of TV time they've had and the lack of development they've had, aside from the angle with the Creeds and their attackers, it doesn't seem like they might be long for NXT. I mean, Imperium's already gone, so they might be right after them. And honestly, good for them if that happens, because they'll get paid more.
I'm starting to wonder if they're long for WWE, period.
For a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I know. But like with Grizzly Young Vets, I mean, they were given a lot of TV time for a while, and then we forgot about them. Like, legit, we forgot about them. So if they bring them up to the main roster, at least right now, I'd be scared that they just kind of toil around in the lower mid-card and then future endeavored. So I don't know. I'm in a way, I kind of almost, for their own sake, kind of wish they make it future endeavor, because they'll find work elsewhere. Uh-huh. No problem. You go to AEW, Impact, what have you, they'll find work. It's a shame. It's a shame that they're not, utilizing this team more, because they're not just entertaining, but they're a hell of a tag team in the ring. All right, let's keep on going. We'll go to Brian Alston. Brian, 31-year senior VIP Torch subscriber. He says, hello, friends. First, I want to wish Tom Stout good luck in his future endeavors. In 6 weeks, he'll be the official AEW correspondent, hashtag trader. I'd love to see that. Like, Tom be our the Torch, official AEW correspondent and just shit all over it all the time. Guys, I apologize. I've sworn a lot in this podcast, and I try to usually keep that to a minimum, but whatever. I didn't tonight. I'm tired. My filter ain't working. Next, I want to officially welcome Doc Bruce to the co-host chair. This is a little inside baseball, but when editor-publisher Wade Keller asked for my approval, I voted to bring Bruce on board. Bruce, don't let me down. And is that two Beatles songs I referenced? I think it is. Question. Now that Gunther with Ludwig Kaiser debuted on SmackDown, can you reevaluate your thoughts on Gunther losing to Bron Breakker? obviously Gunther did the job before leaving the territory. I never have a problem with a wrestler losing to the champion. Breaker is a higher priority than Gunther, plus a wrestler can be rebuilt to be a contender in 4 months. Don't forget to listen to the VIP exclusive NXT Ears Back, where this week champion Adrian Neville takes on Brodus Clay, aka Tyrus. Every week there's a movie question, and this week we'll discuss director Michael Mann. Kelly, there you go. There's a little inside for you if you haven't filmed it yet, recorded it yet. I don't know. You probably already know that. Anyway, thanks for reading my email, Brian. So let's go with Gunther. I think I guess I can kind of reevaluate things with Gunther. Yeah, we talked about last week a call up being in the works, and I think actually the following day the news kind of broke that the Imperium was probably going to be debuting on the main roster, last week, which did end up happening. I'm okay with them doing what they did last week. If this is the case, I still think it felt a little rushed with Bron Breakker, but I guess if you wanted to put him, have him, beat somebody strong, like, well, why not? I feel like there's probably a better way of doing it, but now that we know what ended up happening to Gunther and him winding up on the main roster, okay, fine, it makes sense. You stare at the lights before you leave the territory. It kind of makes sense putting over the champion and especially him being such a new, not just new character, but new champion as well. Certainly makes sense, kind of in hindsight. Now, Bruce, anything on Brian's email?
Here's why I still think it's so stupid that they did that. You don't have to have him lose a match before he gets called up. You don't have to have him in a match before he gets called up. You don't have to even do an injury angle to have him called up. You could just call him up. Really, the issue here was Bartel and Eichner. That story could have played out without any of that, or that didn't have to play out at all. You could still have just called him up without it. And I think, okay, how do I put this? About a third to a quarter of the audience that watches SmackDown and Raw watches NXT. If we're just going to go by numbers, I'm not sure how much overlap there is, but just on the numbers, there's going to be a good amount of them then remember seeing Gunther get pinned by Bron Breakker clean on NXT. And I feel like, especially how you brought him in and you're supposed to make him this overbearing, like big time formidable person in the ring, would have been much better just to have called him up without having that match happen, without having him lose, without having any of that happen. So while in hindsight, sure, it makes sense because that's what you did in the territory days. I mean, we're not in the territory days anymore. And there's a lot more overlap in terms of the promotions and who watches them than there was in the past. So I still think it was a dumb move. I would have just kept Gunther strong and just had him show up. And that's what I would have done.
I kind of wish that is what they did. Like, I understand the understand why they kind of did what they did. I do kind of agree that it, I didn't want Walter to necessarily take another Gunther to take another, another loss. I think him going up the main roster as strong as he was probably would have been better. But is what it is. And I think I did not see SmackDown this week. It's still in my DVR to watch. I might watch it. We'll see. But depending on how they book him and Barthel or Kaiser or whatever his name is now, however they end up, booking these two, if it's going to be as a team, is it going to be, Gunther is kind of a, upper card singles, main event single. And, Kaiser is a, lower card singles wrestler. Like, I want to see how they kind of book these guys because, I mean, Imperium used to be four people and now it's two.
Almost seems like Kaiser is going to be the manager.
Okay. Is that kind of how they played it off?
That's the impression I got.
Okay. So, I guess we kind of just have to wait and see how this plays out. I'm not against it, by any stretch, but I don't know. I think as much as I was starting to kind of tire of the Imperium act, at the same time, I feel like it could have really worked on the main roster. Like, I didn't necessarily want to see them break up the group, give everybody new names and all that. Like, it just, I don't know, it's weird. Yes, Butch, whatever. I'm still not over Butch. Okay, anyway, so I think there are a couple things, like I said, we didn't necessarily get around to talking about, but for the most part, yeah, I think we did. We didn't end up talking about Jiro and Wagner.
Oh,
and,
you don't want to talk about the fantastic Von Wagner and Ikem and Jito match? Oh, how
I mean, you know, if my choice is between Von Wagner and Ikem and Jiro and my pillow, I think I'm going to take my pillow.
If Von Wagner doesn't already put you to sleep.
Yeah, right? So with all of that said, guys, if you want to talk about that, feel free, shoot us an email, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, or call in next week at 515-605-9345, and we'll discuss it. But for now, we're not going to, because, you know, I want to go to bed. So I am Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I will get up at some point this week for you guys to check out if you'd like to do so. Usually I try to get it up before we go live on this show, but tonight I just wanted to sit back and enjoy the show. I didn't want to have to write anything. I just wanted to, you know, mindlessly watch wrestling for once. So that was fun. I enjoyed that. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. I am the Alt Perspective reporter for NXT every Tuesday. You'll see my report. It's sitting there right now. Every commercial break, so you'll be able to see what's going on during the commercial break sometime when I excuse me, when I make sure all the updates are there. And on Twitter, that's right. On Twitter, you can find me at B_Lee253.
All right, and Kelly is still here, but on behalf of Kelly, you can follow him at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games and check out all the stuff that he does, NXT 8 years back, and the NXT report that he'll do, not the Alt Perspective report that Bruce does, but basically the same thing, just, you know, his perspective. So you can certainly check that out when he gets those up. But we will... we'll do this again next week, guys. I think this was a good, fun time. So why not? We'll do it again in 7 days. Take care.